Welcome to Bookwaves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Arturo Perez Reverte, whose book is Queen of the South's latest novel. Earlier novels include The Nautical Chart, Fencing Master, Seville Communion, Club Dumas, and The Flanders Panel. You were here a couple of years ago for your last book, Nautical Chart. I noticed that in a number of your books, you deal with the femme fatale as an archetype, and this time we've come into it and we're looking at it through her eyes.
That's exactly true. This time, what was up to now an enigma, which was viewed from outside, this time I wanted to see what lay behind the silences of that woman, about whom I had spoken in previous novels.
What kind of surprises did you find?
Well, some explanations of those silences. I spent 21 years as a war correspondent, and I discovered that veteran soldiers fall silent. And with this female character, I've discovered, or better put, I have reached a certainty, which is that women are very similar to soldiers who are lost in enemy territory. Women are moving on terrain whose rules have been determined by men. And unlike then, for women, a defeat can mean annihilation. Women can allow themselves the luxury of a defeat much less frequently than men. Women are aware, but they remain silent. I think women are very interesting characters for a novel, especially for a novel like this one.
This doesn't surprise me. Here in the United States, we've had a number of powerful women who have found themselves in prison because they weren't, quote, nice. And in addition, the way that a powerful woman like Hillary Clinton has been treated in the United States, a lot of women are aware of this, but men are not. It would seem, just judging by the macho culture of Spanish countries, whether it be Mexico or Spain, that that's even more severe there.
Right now, any American who travels to Spain will realize that Spanish women are perhaps the most advanced of women in Europe. But it is true that the phenomenon does persist in Latin America. I wanted to deal precisely with that in this novel. I wanted to recount the story of a woman who survives in a world the rules of which were dictated by men. I could have chosen the world of journalism or politics or law to have gotten across the drama of women as a backdrop, because it's an especially machista world, it's an especially violent one, and it offered me narrative possibilities which were much more efficient and much more spectacular. In reality, the story could have taken place in anywhere where women are trying to survive. Furthermore, many French, Italian, or Spanish female readers were, in the countries in which the book was already published, has been published, and been out for a while, have written me and have told me, look, I'm a woman with a normal life, I'm not a drug dealer by any stretch of the imagination, but I am your character, Teresa Mendoza.
When working with three things, trying to show the role of women today, an archetype, and an individual, in doing that, do any of those three elements clash? How do you deal with the various contradictions within those three elements?
The principal conflict that women have today in our world, whether she be a drug dealer, a lawyer, or a journalist, is that women must live in a man's world with rules made by men. She must be more efficient than men. At the same time, she can't stop being a woman. It is required of her to be a woman. And you can find women who are extremely well qualified, who are engaged in a transaction in which their economic future and the future of their company or their bank is on the line. And while they're negotiating with a Japanese, French, or English partner, they feel remorse and they are uneasy because they didn't leave enough food in the refrigerator, because their husband is going to arrive, because their children are sick and she didn't bring them to the doctor. That's how it is. It's a very tough and harsh schizophrenia. That's why I say that all the time women are soldiers in enemy territory.
So there is no, in that sense, there is no conflict in working between even the femme fatale archetype and the way women are dealing. It's the same story. It's always about survival.
In this case, it's not a femme fatale. Or, better said, we see her from the inside and we realize that no femme fatale really is a femme fatale. In reality, man is cruel and evil out of ambition, lust, stupidity, for many reasons. Very often, women are cruel and evil out of a need to survive. Acts of scoundrels, which in men would be unjustifiable, in women, although they may not be justifiable, at least they are understandable.
Arturo Perez Reverte, let's talk about some of the other elements in this book. The book takes place in both Mexico and Spain, and there's an extraordinary role of music in the story, particularly narco corridos. How did you discover them? They're songs about narcotics dealers and drug runners. How did you find out about them?
I've been familiar with Mexico for quite some time. I really like to go to bars and to areas where you can really feel the popular feeling. I have a lot of friends there. And also when I was a reporter, I don't know how I could put this, but I worked a lot with people from the other side of the track. And I've maintained friends and contacts from that time. And when I was in Mexico, I was fascinated by the narco ballad, which you can hear in the bars and in the cars, although officially they're prohibited. And it's very interesting because in the same way that before, the ballads would speak about the heroes of the Mexican Revolution or about the bandoleros, and they would talk about their lives, their violence, and their deaths. Now, these corridos talk about drug dealers. The figure of the drug runner or the drug trafficker in Mexican ballads has substituted, replaced that of the epic hero of the revolution. And leaving aside the moral aspect of the question, objectively and technically, the corridos, the ballads, are very interesting. I have above all been fascinated by the power of the ballad format, which allows you to tell a whole story in 3 minutes. As a matter of fact, I wanted to write a narco ballad, but I don't have musical talent. So what I did was a narco ballad, 500 pages, where all that music and all that popular Mexican folklore is present.
I understand a group in Mexico has written a narco corrido about Teresa Mendoza.
The most popular Mexican narco corrido group, whose name is Los Tigres del Norte, has written a narco corrido about Teresa Mendoza, which has had a rather interesting after effect, since the narco ballads practically always talk about real life characters. Many people have come to believe that the queen, Teresa Mendoza, actually existed, and that the song existed prior to the book. And some people have gotten in touch with me, saying they wanted to get in touch with Teresa Mendoza. And where is Teresa Mendoza today? A Miami television station wanted to interview her and seek her out in Europe or wherever she was hiding. It's really kind of funny. Many people think she's a real-life character, but she isn't.
One of the reasons people probably think that, even though it's clearly a novel and it says novel on it, is that you use real-life people in there, in particular journalists, names of journalists.
That's true. I needed a structure for this novel. A novel, of course, is a story, but you need a structure, a way of giving voice to the character. And since I had to do a personal survey in order to get the documentation for this novel in Mexico, in Spain, and in Morocco, I decided to use that survey, that very survey, as a structure for the novel and have some of my friends appear as real characters. In that sense, in that way, I mixed reality and fiction, and I tried to achieve that atmosphere of credibility that the novel has. But it is a novel. Even the most real reality, when it enters a novel, becomes fiction.
That character, however, the journalist, is you?
At no time does it say that it's me.
Sure.
Although it could have been me or it could have not been me. It's a narrative voice. But what is clear is that at no time does the narrative voice issue any moral judgments. My intention was not to denounce drug dealing, but rather to have my character move through the world of drug dealing and recount it from the inside. A drug dealer doesn't say when he's trafficking, how evil I am when I'm engaged in drug trafficking, how evil I am when I killed. His moral position is different than ours. It would have been false to recount a novel from the inside with a perspective that was based on the outside. That's why I do not judge. The reader must judge, if he dares.
In reading the book, one of the quandaries I had was whether I was reading two parallel stories or whether the section, Teresa Mendoza's section, the third person point of view, was written by the journalist.
It's a difficult issue. It's an issue which technically has a difficult resolution. I had to show a character, a woman who starts off as an illiterate girl in Sinaloa and 12 years later is cultured and powerful, and I had to make that story and that development credible. That's why I planned two different narrative perspectives. One is the journalist doing his survey, explaining how he views it, and the other is her introspective part, which leaves many areas of shadow, which does not purport or attempt to explain everything, which is how the narrator supposes things must be, but he doesn't guarantee that that's how they are. It's a very complicated novel to write, and perhaps it was the most difficult of all the novels that I've written to date. The fact that she was a woman made things more complicated. Virginia Woolf used to say that all the feminine characters of literature are male transvestites. She used to say that Anna Karenina or Madame Bovary were the authors acting as transvestites. I certainly was not trying to engage in one-upmanship with Tolstoy or Flaubert, but I was aware of the danger. That's why I had that very carefully planned structure to, as much as possible, avoid that danger. The narrative voices are a response to that concern of mine.
So by making it unclear whether this is the real Teresa Mendoza or the Teresa Mendoza as seen through the journalist's eyes, you avoid that problem.
Exactamente.
That was my intention, to leave a certain area of ambiguity, that is to say that the narrator assumes, but he cannot assert.
You also focus in on this kind of a side area on the role of literature in life, in particular in this book, The Count of Monte Cristo, which, as it turns out, says a lot more about the plot than we think as we're reading the story early on. There are several times where there are paragraphs about the role of literature and its importance. And I'm wondering if Arturo Perez Reverte is throwing in his own little editorial comments.
No,
I didn't want to go that far. It was just an operative question. I wanted to have a woman who was illiterate or practically illiterate with a very, very superficial education. I needed to have this woman in a period of 12 years become a reasonably cultured and a reasonably elegant woman. And she also had to be a powerful woman in the drug world. For that trip, I needed Virgils who could accompany her on the way. I needed mentors who would make her evolve. That's why I sought out her friend Patricia O'Farrill and the Russian Oleg Yasikov. But above all, I sought out books. Books help her. They help her to understand life and to understand herself. It would have been absurd and incredible if she had tried to start reading Proust or Faulkner in jail. Although there are novelists who manage to stick that into their novels, I can't. She's got to start at the bottom. And The Count of Monte Cristo is perfect. An 8 or 9-year-old kid can read it and be hooked. And furthermore, it's a Bible. It's a manual filled with things. The Count of Monte Cristo is one of the great novels of literature because in addition to adventures, and it's got lots of adventures, it's got everything. It's got heart, it's got vengeance, it's got treasure, it's got memory. And for a woman who's in jail, it's a basic book. That is so true, so much so that the choice of that book was not fortuitous. The director general of the Spanish prison network told me that The Count of Monte Cristo is the novel which is most requested in the jail libraries. Anyone who reads it will understand why.
It also serves as a kind of blueprint for some of the story of Queen of the South.
Exacto.
And also for a reader who is familiar with the book, can make plans and enjoy the narrative strategy even more.
You're listening to an interview with Arturo Perez Reverte, whose latest book is Queen of the South. The book is very detailed in terms of research. How long and how much research did you do? And this is a different kind of research from, say, the kind of research you would do for your historical novels.
Yes. There are no drug-dealing libraries. There are no drug-dealing museums. This time, I had to go to seek out the material in the places where the material is present, in Mexico, southern Spain, and Morocco. I spent about 6 to 8 months on that. I used my old reporter's date book. I called upon old friends to ask them to return old favors. And I spent a lot of time at bars or in rather unsavory or savory, depending on your perspective, environments. I paid for many drinks. I spoke little and listened a lot. It was a very enriching experience. It was an interesting one, and it was entertaining. And curiously enough, it was not a dangerous one. I have an advantage. I spend a lot of time living in those worlds. I know the rules. Paradoxically, it's easier to move around there than in quote-unquote honorable society. If you know the rules, everything is clear, everything is straight. And furthermore, the rules are very important there. Everyone respects those rules because, unlike this society, there, if you don't respect the rules, the consequences are serious. Here, you go through a red light, you break the rules, and you'll have a fine. There, you and your family pay with your life. So I know the rules. So by sticking to those rules, I moved around with great ease.
What are the basic rules, then?
Well, there are many rules, and they have varying degrees of intensity. Give men cigarettes when they smoke. Give men cigarettes when you smoke. Don't interfere with other people's women. Pay for the drinks in the bars. Don't ask any questions, but rather wait for other people to tell you what they want to tell you. Never lie. Say, I'm a novelist. I'm going to write a novel. If you want to talk, talk. And if you don't want to talk, don't talk. And while you're deciding whether or not you want to talk, I'll pay for your tequila. And above all, you need to be faithful to your word. Even if you're a son of a bitch, you've got to be a straight-shooting son of a bitch. And that's very clear, and that's very clean, and it's easy to play according to those rules if you're a good guy, and I'm a good guy.
If you're trying to get a specific piece of information that you absolutely need for a scene in your book, how could you get that information if you can't ask about the information?
There are many ways of asking the question. I spent 21 years as a reporter. If you can make sure that five drunk Sierra Leonese citizens don't hack you to death with their machetes, if you can ensure that a Serbian who just killed five Bosnians in front of you doesn't fire at you, if you can get a Palestinian to allow you to accompany him while he's attacking an Israeli tank outside of Beirut, you can get a drug dealer to sit down for drinks with you and open up.
The book came out how long ago in Spain?
Un año y medio.
A year and a half ago.
Have you had any reports back from how the people in the drug-running world view your book?
I have had a lot of feedback. As a matter of fact, in the presentation of the book in Sinaloa, in Mexico, where there was about 1,000 people with musicians and tequila and everything, some of my friends, drug dealers, were seated among the audience. And when they were listening to me talk, they were nodding. They were very happy. They were there with their women who were elegantly decked out with their jewels and their very tight-fitting clothing. The book is written with respect. Before I said that I do not judge, I've received letters from people who are in jail in the United States, for example, from someone in Tucson, and from people in Mexico and Spain who have been absolutely delighted with the novel. Because it's real, because it does not condemn, it does not judge, it just recounts a world. In any case, I'm going to tell you something. Sometimes there are many types of bastards, but basically there are two categories of bastards. Those who don't run any risk and never pay for a mistake or for defeat, the people who are in offices camouflaged behind a financial shell company or behind a computer. Any coward can do that. And those who need to run risks in order to win or lose. People who need valor to put everything on the line, and their life depends on whether they win or lose. They may all be bastards, and I'm not saying that I admire any of them. I cannot help but feel a profound contempt for those who run no risks, and a certain dark respect might be the best term for the people who are willing to. That respect is present in the novel, and the people who have read the book have perceived that respect.
Arturo Perez Reverte, having done this research and having talked to these people, what's your overarching view of the way drug laws work in this world, and in particular, understanding that there is a drug problem, how does one deal with it? Because it's clear that what's going on in terms of the way laws work doesn't work.
It's clear that they don't work because there is complicity from the financial companies. There is complicity from the banks and from a whole bunch of structures that depend on drugs. You know what the main problem of drugs is? It's not drug trafficking and it's not consumption. The problem is that the drug trafficker builds around himself an economic fabric which lives off the drug money. The man who sells the cars, the guy who sells the furniture and the houses, the guy who sells the household appliances, the banker who is a financial advisor investing in bonds and savings accounts. All of these people are supposedly honorable people, but they benefit from drug money. So they are passive accomplices. So at the end of the day, that creates a social mesh, a real economic system with its market rules, its rules of supply and demand, which no longer has anything to do with consumption or public health. And that, indeed, is very difficult to eradicate. So I have no real ideas in that regard except to note that it is a reality and it's there. And I'm just a novelist, I'm not an analyst, and I have no obligation to offer any type of solution. I recount what's there. In any case, I imagine you saw Sonnenberg's film Traffic. Well, when I saw that film, I could understand the Mexicans who were trying to get ahead in such a tough, cruel way. But I could feel no empathy for Kirk Douglas's,
Michael Douglas's
stupid daughter, who, having everything in life for entertainment or out of stupidity, becomes a client of that, of those drugs. I felt greater pain at the death of the Mexican drug dealer than at the tragedy of that stupid girl who got what she was looking for. That's my ideology.
I'm going to change subjects a little here. I want to ask you about something that I've begun to notice in literature, Spanish language literature, and I'm curious where you fit in. For a long time, the basic trend was toward magic realism, a la Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and I've noticed lately that a number of younger writers have rejected magic realism in favor of a kind of gritty realism. Is this something that penetrates your world at all, and if so, do you see yourself in any place in that continuum?
Well, I am not a strong supporter of divisions and classification. I just tell stories. Other people do the classification. I go hunting alone. And in literature, it's the same thing. In any case, I'm a reader, and as a reader, I have my own criteria. Magic realism was very good during its time. It served to inspire masterworks, but as always happens, a lot of garbage crept in under that flag. There were a lot of empty words and a lot of prose that just wanted to make a lot of noise. It was good, but that's past. Time changes, and now there are other tendencies. As far as I'm concerned, I am part of those novelists who recount things that have to do with current life, present-day reality. That's what I can say. I'm not very good for literary theory.
Do you work closely with your translators?
I do read English. The issue is my level of reading and my level of expression. very low, and I resort to an interpreter because I don't want to give a poor intellectual image. As a matter of fact, I do a first reading of the galleys of the translated copy to see if there are any major errors. I'm in touch with the translators. They always consult with me on any doubts they may have. And in this case, in addition, there was a very major issue. The novel has a lot of slang. It's got a lot of Mexican slang. It's got a lot of Spanish slang. And it's got a lot of criminal slang. And in addition, there is a development, an evolution in the way she talks from the time she's in Mexico to the time she's in Spain. So a lot of things are lost in translation, obviously. Not everyone is fortunate enough to be able to write in Spanish. So what I did was make a 500-word, more or less 500-word glossary, which I sent to the translators so they could clarify the most difficult areas or the most complex. I can say that I've been translated to 28 languages, and I'm in ongoing contact with about 13 or 14 different translators, Japanese, Korean, Russian. I don't even want to think what may be going on there.
In this book, in the English language version, there are several places where the Spanish is left as Spanish. You deliberately chose that, or did that come from the translator?
It was a decision of mine. There were certain words that were incapable of translation, and when translated, they lost power. And in other cases, the translator had looked for words that were not Mexican. They were Puerto Rican or of other origins, but in any case, they were not Mexican. I said to him, please, if there's any doubt, leave the words in their Mexican-Spanish form.
There are also some baseball metaphors. Were those in the original Spanish?
Yes, they are present in the original Spanish in the Mexican phase. Baseball is barely known in Spain, but baseball terminology is quite often used in northern Mexico for day-to-day situations. And she's Mexican. She's from Sinaloa. That's why I had her think and reason and talk as they do there, and that included baseball terminology. Linguistically speaking, it was a tough job, but it was quite a rewarding one. What I mean to say, it was very rewarding for me. It was very interesting.
Now that you've written from a woman's perspective, do you think this will change how you write about women in future books?
I don't know. One thing is for certain. You're not the same when you start to write a novel as when you finish it. The same way you're not the same before you read a novel and after you've finished. I spent 2 years reflecting on this subject. I inserted into the novel everything that I discovered about women generally. It's obvious that that has changed the way I look at life and the way I look at women. It has made me evolve. I don't know at what point because I still haven't gotten there yet, but the woman in my next novel, if there's a woman in my next novel, that woman will owe a lot to these 2 years of development that I went through side by side with Teresa Mendoza.
Arturo Perez Reverte, are there queens of the South? Are there women who are actually doing this drug running?
Well, that is a very interesting question, because I was sure that there were no women who would reach such high levels in the hierarchies of drug dealing. There are women in the low levels and in the intermediate levels, but not at the highest levels. That's why I wrote the novel, to do something which would be different and original. But often, reality insists on altering fiction. And 6 months after the novel came out in Mexico, a woman turned up who was running a drug dealing network on the coast. I didn't know that when I wrote the novel. But they called her the Queen of the Pacific, obviously influenced by the title of the novel. So I don't know to what extent the interaction between reality and life turns towards life or fiction. But what the devil? That also is literature. Or above all, that, precisely that, is what literature is.
Now, are you working on a contemporary or historical novel?
I have a series of short historical novels, which are called The Adventures of Captain Alatriste, which have still not been published in the United States. They will be starting next year. By the way, the film version of those novels is underway. Viggo Mortensen will play the role of Captain Alatriste, and he's a mercenary. He's not that politically correct a hero. He's a hired hitman from the 17th century. Well, I am now working on a new novel in that series, a new title. In addition, I could add to that that the young sidekick of Ale Triste, his friend in the novel, which will be played by the Mexican Gael García Bernal, who is in Almodóvar's film and who's a young actor, and he's at a very positive point in his career, which is about to really take off. The shooting will start in December or January. The shooting will take about half a year. It's a very expensive production. It's the most expensive production ever made in Spain. And I imagine that you'll be able to see it in the United States at the beginning of 2006. I observe it from afar, and you always have to keep in mind that the novel is the novel and the film is the film. You have the example of the Dumas Club, shot by Roman Polanski under the name The Ninth Gate. Johnny Depp played the main character. And it's an okay film, but it has little to do with the novel, although Johnny Depp, in the role of Lucas Corso, the book hunter, is extraordinary. But the book is the book, and the movie is the movie.
You've been listening to an interview with Arturo Perez Reverte, whose latest book is Queen of the South. The translator here in this interview is Daniel Scheer. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.